Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Gabe Plotkin, and I represent Isaac Vasquez. The district court convicted Isaac Vasquez of knowingly failing to register as required by the Federal Sex Offender Registration Act on evidence that he knew he had failed to register as required by the Illinois State Sex Offender Act. The Illinois State Sex Offender Act is different than SORNA, the federal law, and evidence that someone knows Illinois' registration requirements is different than evidence he knows SORNA's registration requirements. The government's evidence was therefore insufficient, and Mr. Vasquez's conviction should be reversed. The third element of 18 U.S.C. 2250, which is the federal failure to register statute under which Mr. Vasquez was charged, demands proof that a defendant knowingly failed to register or update a registration as required by SORNA. Now, the district court, in order to find Mr. Vasquez guilty, chopped off the last phrase, as required by SORNA, and inserted in its place, as required by Illinois law. That is a different statute, contrary to the plain language of the statute. Congress could have made it a crime under 2250 for someone to knowingly fail to register as required by any state sex offender registration act. In fact, SORNA defines the term sex offender registry to apply to state sex offender registration acts. They could have used that term in 2250, but they didn't. Congress used the phrase as required by SORNA. That language cannot be cut out, and it can't be ignored. It's also important because to use that different phrase demands different proof. It demands different evidence. SORNA creates its own independent federal registration obligations. It defines who must register, where they must register, how often they must register, for how long they must register, and what information they must require. They must provide at registration. And these requirements are different than those of state laws, to the point where a person can comply with Illinois state sex offender registration requirements and still violate SORNA. For example, Illinois says you have to register for 10 years. SORNA says register for life. So a person stops registering after 10 years, he's still complying with Illinois law, but he's violated SORNA. Importantly, the converse is also true. A person can violate Illinois sex offender law and still comply with SORNA. One example that comes to mind is Illinois law says if you're going to move and change residence to another jurisdiction, you have to provide notice to Illinois more than 10 days before you leave. SORNA has no such requirement. It says after you move, then in the new jurisdiction, you have, I believe it's 3 days to make your report. The requirements of each sex offender law, Illinois and SORNA, are different. And proving that Mr. Vasquez knew what was required of him by Illinois law and that he failed to do that is not proof, as demanded by 2250, that he knew what was required of him by SORNA.
Didn't this circuit address that theory that you're arguing in the Dixon case, indicating that the registrant didn't have to know the specific requirements of the federal act?
No, it's not my understanding of Dixon. One of the arguments raised in Dixon is that it violated due process for the defendant not to have been given the specific notice that's called for in SORNA at 16.917. There's a provision that says every sex offender should be given a piece of paper telling him he has to register, what the requirements are, and he has to sign that. And my understanding of the argument in Dixon is that because the defendant didn't get that notice, it violated due process to charge him with that crime. My argument is not that there's any due process violation here. It's that Congress wrote a specific statute that demanded proof that Mr. Vasquez knew what he was required to do before he could be convicted, that that was Congress's intent in drafting 2250, and it imposed a requirement on the government in prosecuting someone, separate and apart from what due process may or may not require.
Were you saying he should have gotten the same kind of notice he got when he left prison regarding the state law?
Well,
where he had to sign something and acknowledge that he knew he had to register as a offender?
Not necessarily. That is what is provided for in SORNA, that is the proper steps that are supposed to be taken. And that didn't happen here. And as far as I know, it's not happening because states have not implemented SORNA. And
what does it have to, in order to be, I guess you're talking about knowing, right?
I'm talking about knowing,
and
correct.
So what does it, what do you think, what has to be done in order to prove knowing?
Well, certainly if someone was given that notification
right.
sheet, that would be the clearest and most obvious way that
okay,
you
but
could
that
prove.
That didn't happen. So
that didn't happen. There could be other circumstantial evidence, things, comments that Mr. Vasquez or someone made to another person, comments they made to
saying
police
he knows about it?
Saying he knows about it or indicating for some reason I moved because I wanted to get out from under all these crazy obligations I had that the federal government imposed. Confessions happen all the time. You ask somebody, didn't you leave because you were worried about this? Yes, I did. There's lots of different ways that someone could prove knowing violation.
Are we confined to the stipulated facts?
Yes.
So there's not any, there's a lot of gaps in those, obviously, about what happened here and there and what could have been asked and that sort of thing. So it seems if we're confined to that, you're saying given those facts, there's nothing that shows that he knew about
it. That's absolutely correct. And this was a trial. It was a stipulated bench trial, but it was a trial. The government had a burden of putting on evidence that Mr. Vasquez knew what he was failing to do and that what he failed to do was what was required by SORNA. And there is absolutely nothing in the stipulated facts, which is the entirety of the government's evidence, the entirety of their case, indicating that he knew what he was failing to do.
Well, from your view, what is the government saying that isn't enough?
The government has said, we've met our burden of proof by showing that he knew what was required of him by Illinois law. That's enough. Even though the statute says knowingly failed to register as required by SORNA, it's enough that he knew what he was failing to do, that he was failing to do Illinois law.
Is that because if he did what he was supposed to do under Illinois law, that would have complied with SORNA?
That's not true, though. I mean, I'm not sure why. I think that's they put on that evidence because that's all the evidence they had. But it is not true that just because a person complies with Illinois law, he's compliant with SORNA, nor is the opposite true. And that's an important point. A person can comply with Illinois law and still violate SORNA. That's why you can't substitute proof of knowledge of one with proof of knowledge of the other. Congress specifically wrote a statute here that says knowingly fails to register as required by SORNA. And knowingly has to be read here, first of all, as having meaning, that he knew something and he knew what he was failing to do. But not just that, knowingly has to be read to modify not just the failure to register, but the as required by SORNA. And I bring this up, the Supreme Court made it clear recently in the Flores-Figueroa case, that knowingly modifies not just the verb that follows it, but the object of that action. That is the ordinary English usage, the ordinary way, the plain meaning of the phrase knowingly fails to register as required by SORNA. And that absent some type of special context or explanation from Congress as to why they would require something different than the ordinary plain meaning of that phrase, that is the meaning that a court needs to give to the phrase, to the term knowingly when it's followed by a verb and its object.
So you're saying if he had complied with Illinois law and he had complied with California law where he was arrested, he would have still been in violation of 2250?
It's conceivable that a person could comply with Illinois law.
Some other person, not your client, but you're saying there's a hypothetical person who could be in compliance but still in violation of 2250.
That's correct.
Your guy, had he complied with Illinois law and California law, would not have been in violation of 2250.
I guess that's not. I'm not sure that's necessarily true. First of all, I will point out, with respect to the evidence in the record, there isn't evidence that he ever had a reporting obligation in California. There's no evidence as to when he actually got to California and whether that became his residence or whether it triggered a reporting obligation there. I think it's also worth, just as a matter of fact, and then I'll save my time for rebuttal, Mr. Vasquez was out in the world for a very short period of time after SORNA applied to him and before his arrest. February 28, 2007 is when the Attorney General said SORNA applies retroactively to people like Mr. Vasquez. January 3, 2007 is when he was arrested. This court in Dixon also made clear that we don't start the clock right at February 28, 2007. That's too soon. So we're talking less than a four-month period of time in which Mr. Vasquez maybe should have done something in compliance with SORNA and didn't. So I think that's an important fact to keep in mind in talking about what Mr. Vasquez specifically did or didn't do. But also just to say, we're interpreting a statute, its meaning and the intent of Congress, that must be applied uniformly to everybody, regardless of their action. So Mr. Vasquez's actions don't necessarily change the meaning of the plain language or what Congress intended. Save the rest of time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. And Ms. Clark. Good morning. Hold on just a minute here. All right, go ahead.
May it please the Court, Jennifer Clark on behalf of the United States. Every circuit court to consider the statutory and Commerce Clause arguments that Mr. Vasquez makes has rejected them. As to the statutory argument, Mr. Vasquez essentially seeks an ignorance of the law defense that's been rejected now by four circuits, or to resurrect the due process argument that this court rejected in Dixon. Mr. Vasquez,
the ignorance of the law, meaning if the law exists, therefore you should have known it. Is that it?
That's correct.
And so it doesn't, knowingly doesn't mean any more than the law exists.
What Mr. Vasquez needed to know here was that he did not register. He needs to know that he did not take the acts that that would constitute registration.
Well, if he had done followed the state laws, would that have been enough?
It's difficult to say because Mr. Vasquez wholly failed to register in any jurisdiction in any way. This is not a case where he registered on day five or registered for 10 years and then didn't register in the 11th year. Mr. Vasquez never registered at all anywhere in California, Illinois, or any other jurisdiction for that matter.
And we're confined to, you agree we're confined to these stipulated facts, right?
That is correct. It was a bench trial on stipulated facts.
And this you all agreed to?
That's right. Because Mr. Vasquez wholly failed to register anywhere in any jurisdiction, he violated the requirement under SORNA to register and keep his registration current in each jurisdiction where he lives, works, or goes to school. And that general requirement is the same under federal or state law. By failing to register in a jurisdiction, he has failed to register as required by SORNA. He concedes that he knew he was required to register in Illinois, and he concedes that the government does not have to show that he knew this duty came from federal law. So it's difficult to see what more Mr. Vasquez could possibly have.
He's not charged with violating this Illinois law.
That's right. He's charged under the federal statute.
Well, his knowledge of the Illinois law, how does that help you?
In fact, he doesn't even have to know that he has the duty to register. What he has to know is that he didn't register. And
I don't understand. He doesn't know that he didn't do something. He has to know he didn't do something he didn't know was wrong, was required.
That's correct. He did. He as with possession.
Does that make sense to you?
It does. It's particularly in the context of sex offenders who have been...
Listen, I'm all against sex offenders in the abstract. What I want to know is, does it make sense to you that all he has to know is he didn't do something he didn't know he was required to do?
It does make sense because sex offenders have been highly regulated for many years. They've been subject to registration requirements in every state since at least 1996. They've been subject to federal regulations since 1994. This is not a situation where...
I didn't think it sprung up on them suddenly, but I mean, we're back to kind of parsing this whole thing out. But it is required that he knows that he's violating the law.
The statute says knowingly fail to register, so it requires that he knows he did not register as a sex offender.
It says knowingly fail to register as required by this federal law. So how can we read that differently than the knowing of this transfer means of identification of another person statute that's discussed? Doesn't the knowingly apply to all of that?
First of all, as this court recognized in Cox, the interpretation used in Flores-Figueroa does not necessarily apply to every single statute. But even if it were an appropriate interpretation to take here, the phrase "register as required by SORNA" is merely a shorthand for the list of acts that would constitute registration. For example, registering and keeping one's registration current in the jurisdiction where one lives or in the jurisdiction where one goes to school. The fact that Congress used the word SORNA in the word Sex Offender Registration and Notification Act in the statute does not imply that you have to know that SORNA, that federal law is the source of the duty.
That makes sense, but I want to know, he has to know he has to register someplace else, doesn't he?
No, I don't think that he does, although, of course, if the court feels that there has to be some knowledge of a legal duty to register, that is more than amply met in Mr. Vasquez's case, where he served a year in prison already for not registering, and where he signed a notification form that told him he had...
He wasn't aware of the fact that he was supposed to register. The year should have kind of given him a hint that there was something about it requiring his registration.
I'm sorry. Could you repeat the question?
I said if he hadn't realized that he had to register, the fact that he served a year for not doing it might be a kind of a hint that you...
That would be a circumstance that might prompt him to
and
inquire.
It'd wake me up anyway.
Well, that's a state law, and we went over that. You're saying that all we have is he knew he had to register under the state law. That's what he signed when he got out, and you're saying he violated SORNA because he didn't follow the state law, I guess.
Yes, that's correct. He knows that he was required to register. One of the things that SORNA requires is that he register in a jurisdiction, that is, with the state system that's in place. There's not a separate federal system in place for registration. These registrations take place through the state systems. SORNA has set up a template for states to follow to adapt their procedures to certain harmonized minimum standards, and that is how one would go about registering under SORNA. There's not a separate place he can go to do that.
Have all the states complied?
No. So far, they have until July of this year, with the possibility of one further extension. So far, Ohio has complied.
If he registered appropriately with SORNA, could he at the same time be guilty of violating the California registration laws?
If he registered in accordance with SORNA,
is there a possibility he could comply with the federal law and still be in violation of the state law?
I'm not sure of the details of California law, but there are differences. For example, some states require different people to different offenses to register. Those people would not be required to register under SORNA if they're not among the listed sex offenders. For example, some states currently require lifetime registration for all sex offenders, and under SORNA, it's a tiered system, so it's only the most serious offenders that have lifetime registration requirements. So feasibly, there could be an instance where someone would have to register for 15 years under SORNA, but for life under the state law. So if they comply with SORNA for 15 years and then don't register, they would be in violation of state law, but they couldn't be prosecuted.
If they complied with state law, would they always be in conformance with SORNA?
They would be in compliance with the requirement to register and keep a registration current in a jurisdiction, but there are some differences, for example, where someone would need to register within 3 days of changing an address, and that time difference may be different under state law. I'm not aware of any cases where that's been the fact pattern or where those prosecutions are being brought.
The stipulation carefully says on or about April 11, 2007, defendant was present in Illinois. On July 3, 2007, defendant was present and found in Los Angeles County, California, where he's taken into custody. It doesn't say when he got there. It doesn't say that he was there 3 days. And I don't understand this stipulation. Why we have to get stuck with this on review? What was the point of agreeing to this stipulation, this limiting, when he and the same goes to the Commerce Clause issue that he traveled in interstate commerce. That's what that says, but it doesn't say what his purpose was or his motive or anything. It sounds logical that he's doing it to get out from under this registration requirements. He's trying to go where the 100,000 others are that you can't find. But it doesn't say that.
You're right. The reasons for the facts that were included in the stipulation and those that weren't is not in the record. It's true that the stipulation does state just the date that he was in Illinois.
Could have gotten there the day before that.
The date that he moved to California. His motion for a speedy trial, he stated himself that he was actually residing with his spouse in California, but that's not in the stipulated facts.
That's what we got. We're stuck with that, right?
Yes.
As far as the Commerce Clause, what's the Commerce Clause connection? What are you saying? Why this that he is falls under that?
The stipulated facts quite clearly state that he traveled in interstate commerce.
Yeah.
He was present in one state and he was arrested months later in California. That's all that the statute requires. It requires travel in interstate commerce.
For what reason?
The statute does not require that, and there's...
You mean it's not to facilitate anything? It's not to do something to interfere with or to advance or something, some kind of affecting interstate commerce? He just went?
Right, not as an element of the offense.
So everybody who goes somewhere is automatically somehow subjected to interstate commerce.
For SORNA, they have to first be required to register under SORNA. They have to have a conviction that requires them to register, and then travel in interstate commerce.
Yeah, he doesn't know about that one.
What Congress was trying to deal with when it passed SORNA was a situation where 100,000 sex offenders had gone missing, where that they found that the or that they noted that the problem of missing sex offenders, the enforcement problem, was primarily caused by people moving from state to state. It was caused by the disparities among state laws and sex offenders trying to take advantage of these disparities and falling through the cracks.
Yeah, they're moving in interstate commerce to avoid the being subjected to the law, and that's okay. That's something that makes sense. Now you've got interstate commerce, a reason to travel in interstate commerce to avoid the federal law or even state laws.
That doesn't mean that has to be an element of offense.
I'm just worried that there isn't any element. It's just the fact that he traveled, maybe go visit his mother, or maybe to go and come back.
When what Congress is regulating is the channels of interstate commerce or persons and things in interstate commerce, the jurisdictional element itself has been sufficient to tie the regulated conduct to interstate commerce, that the thing or the person in actually moves in interstate commerce ties it to Congress's Commerce Clause authority.
Just moving.
For example,
any of us. I came from Indiana.
For example,
federal... You're safe, though. You haven't been convicted for sex
crime. Well, don't
as
worry.
As far as I know.
Don't worry. I'm not going to stay here either.
The federal carjacking statute, for example, it's sufficient that the car at some point moved in interstate commerce. It doesn't have to have been carjacked for the purpose of affecting interstate commerce or for using the channels of commerce. Similarly with handgun possession, it doesn't have to be for the purpose of, it's just that the gun moved at some point in interstate commerce.
Yes, but the whole point, and I know this is sort of a dispute there, the gun, the reason you're going to want to know where the gun is because it affects interstate commerce, or could, with somebody's using it or something. So you want to take that off the street. You have a lot of reasons how that, even though interstate, could affect interstate commerce. This is just one guy who is, it's what something he has to do. That's what he's we're charging with, or convicting of, a law that he, something he has to do. He says he doesn't know about it, but at the same time, there's no, the only reason I can see why he would go in interstate commerce is because he wants to avoid, just as you said, these 100,000 that you can't find. Well, that's certainly a motive that would, in my view, subject him to the interstate commerce, he's got a purpose to go interstate to do something wrong.
But Congress can draft the jurisdictional element more broadly than the very core of what it's trying to get at. When, if it were to draft the jurisdictional element more narrowly, it would be under-inclusive and defeat the purpose of what Congress is trying to achieve in the regulatory scheme. Here, for example, if someone travels in interstate commerce for the purpose of evading the registration requirements, that's the core of what Congress is trying to get at. But when someone, for example, moves across state lines and isn't sure what they're going to do, they're not doing it for the purpose of, but they get there and they think, hey, I think I won't register, that defeats the purpose of Congress's, that Congress is trying to get at just as much. So drawing
Is this kind of like the so-called scarlet letter or whatever? Once you're a sexual predator or whatever we're calling them, that you, anytime you move in interstate commerce, you're a threat of something.
You're a threat if you stay at home, too.
Well, yeah, I know, but I'm trying to get interstate commerce connection here so that just because somebody crosses state lines, he's automatically subject to federal jurisdiction under the Commerce Clause.
Well, what Congress was looking at was the state's inability to, on their own, to remedy the problem of people disappearing because of the disparities between state law. When someone moves across state borders and doesn't register, it harms the state that person is coming from. Even if that person had registered in his home state, now that state has a sex offender registry that is inaccurate, that would undermine public confidence in the reliability of the information.
And the community to which he has moved is exposed to this guy, and they have no idea he's there or that he's a sex offender.
That's right.
And that's a harm that's moved from one location where it was identified to another where it's not.
That's right. And he
in a different state.
It's basically moving of offenders that Congress has found, and states, every single state has found, are offenders that need to be tracked, that registration is an appropriate thing to do. It's important to know where these people are moving. And
those are so all important. Nobody's going to disagree with it. In fact, what bothers me is this is a very important law. It's one that really should be enforced, and they should be kept track of, like there's a GPS thing attached to them. I understand that, but I'm worried this just didn't get it done. That's where I didn't know. And just to say, well, he traveled in interstate commerce, doesn't matter why or anything, he just happens to be a bad guy, and that's it.
If you can answer that and wrap up, please.
Thank you. When the regulatory scheme is targeted at interstate commerce, as this is, the scheme is targeted at dealing with the movement of people between states, dealing with the disparities between state laws that the states themselves cannot remedy. Congress can reasonably conclude that it's necessary to register sex offenders, even those before they move, in order to facilitate the tracking of them, and to back that up with criminal enforcement. At a minimum, that is a valid exercise of Congress's Commerce Clause authority, and the registration provisions and the criminal enforcement provisions are necessary and proper means to accomplish that legitimate end. If there are no further questions, we ask that the Court affirm Mr. Vasquez's conviction.
Thank you, Ms. Clark. How much time? We kept Ms. Clark up there a little longer. You could have a full 5 minutes if you need it.
Thank you.
You have to use it all.
Thank you. If I could, I guess, stay on the Commerce Clause for just a minute because I didn't get to touch on that. Government keeps coming up and saying purpose. The purpose is noble. We're trying to do a good thing here, and therefore it's okay. And that's not true. The purpose may be as noble as can be, But that doesn't necessarily give the federal government authority to do anything. The end doesn't justify the means. There has to be Commerce Clause authority. And with respect to 2250, it isn't. A person could cross state lines for 2 minutes and come back, and all of a sudden it's a federal crime. Whereas if they stay in Illinois and never register as required by Illinois law or as required by SORNA, they can't be touched by federal. But you put 1 foot over the line, all of a sudden it's a federal crime. It's got to be more than that. If you're going to regulate the movement of people in interstate commerce and make it a crime to move in interstate commerce, there has to be a connection between that movement and the crime.
How do you distinguish that from Bacon, the one case cited by the government in their answer, which rejected the argument that the defendant, quote, could not, as a matter of law, knowingly fail to register under SORNA because he was never told of the specific registration obligations under that law?
We're going back to the notice, the issue of notice. This is the argument that other circuits have basically rejected the argument.
The cert was denied, too, but just go ahead. That's
The argument in other circuits, for the most part, is the argument that was raised in Dixon about due process, and that because I didn't get the specific handwritten document, this specific notice form that I signed, it violated due process to prosecute me. Because no one told me what I did, it violated due process. A number of these cases actually got up to the Court of Appeals.
Whaley, as I understand it, said that they dismissed as meritless the argument that because the government did not inform the SORNA's requirements, it could not have knowingly failed, reasoning that ignorance of law is not a defense, that the defendant was aware of state law registration required. That sort of is not a specific intent crime.
Well, first of all, the argument, as pointed out, was that because the government didn't give me the notice specifically, it was insufficient. Whaley then, in a footnote, discusses this idea of ignorance of the law.
Yeah.
And I just, frankly, I think that those courts have gotten it wrong because those courts have...
That's what I wanted you to say.
Yes.
What you want us to do is take a position in variance in these two courts.
I want this court to get it right. And this court to say that knowledge of what you're required to do under state law is not the same as knowledge of what you're required to do under federal law. This is not an ignorance of the law defense, by the way. These courts all focus on ignorance of the law. This is not an argument that the government has to prove Mr. Vasquez knew he was committing a federal crime, that his failure to register was a federal crime. It's an argument that Mr. Vasquez knew what he was failing to do. And the government has put on evidence that he knew he was failing to do A, but they haven't put on evidence that he knew he was failing to do B. And A and B are different. What SORNA requires is different than what state law requires. And to point this out, the government suggests in their brief that, well, really, it's the same thing, do what the state requires. And that was echoed a little bit in what was said here today. I think it's important to point out the Attorney General, on February 28, 2007, when he issued the interim rule, and the CFR site is pointed out in the briefs, in that statement, the Attorney General says, SORNA directly imposes registration obligations on sex offenders as a matter of federal law, including provisions concerning such matters as the time for registration, the information to be provided by the registrant, and keeping the information up to date. This is an independent federal obligation that tells you how frequently, for how long you have to register, all the information that
By
you need to
large,
register.
By and large, we enjoy thinking about the Attorney General, but it's not the law, what he says or thinks.
Well,
for which I'm eternally grateful.
Well, 2 points on that. One, SORNA does, in part, give the Attorney General specific authority to define the contours of SORNA. So in that respect, I think it's a little different than him just opining on his view of the law. I also think it's important because the government can't take multiple positions. The government can't come up here and argue in defense of a conviction on a position that is contrary to that of the Attorney General. I believe that the Attorney General is correct, and the government in this case, in trying to uphold the conviction of Mr. Vasquez, is incorrect.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Plotkin. And by the way, you continued on with your appointment on behalf of Mr. Vasquez after you left the public defender's office in private practice. The court is grateful for your service and vigorous advocacy for your client. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to both counsel. And we'll take that case under advisement.